the title says, today I'm going to be talking about biotic interference of a classical biological control agent of the soybean aphid. And before I get to explaining what biotic interference is and why it's important in this system, let me first give you a bit of background on the system itself. So what you see here is the soybean aphid, Aphis glycines. And soybean aphid is an invasive pest in North America and was first discovered here in the year 2000. Since then, it's caused significant detriments, including resulted in millions of pounds of insecticides on a crop that previously required little or no control for insects. It's caused significant yield losses, it can transmit viruses, and it may be facilitating increased densities of another potentially harmful invasive species, Harmonia axyridis. Because of these ills associated with the soybean aphid, a classical biological control program was instigated by my advisor, George Heimpel, to see if we could bring a natural enemy from the soybean aphid's native range in East Asia here to North America to try to control it in a safe and efficient manner. And after some extensive pre-release testings in a quarantined facility, including fecundity tests and non-target impacts, this parasitoid, the Aphidiine braconid Bonodoxis communis, was chosen as the most promising agent to release in North America. Now, while it looked to be a very promising agent from the quarantine testing, one possibly important factor that's impossible to test in a quarantine facility is how it's going to interact with resident species already in the soybean community. And when resident species interact with the classical biological control agent in a way that's detrimental to the agent's efficacy, it's called biotic interference. And as you can guess, that's kind of a catch-all term for any way that resident species could inhibit the classical biological control agent. And it could work through trophic interactions, such as predation and parasitism, through competition, or it could interact with a target species mutualists in a way that's detrimental, or some other ways as well. And shown below is one example of biotic interference working through intraguild predation. And what you see here is a Bonodoxis communis mummy that has been partially eaten by a lacewing. Since we were concerned with how biotic interference might affect Bonodoxis communis, before any releases were made in 2005, we conducted a pre-release study where we attempted to predict the strength of biotic interference by using a surrogate parasitoid and simulating a release. And the surrogate parasitoid that we used in this study was Aphidius colmani for a few reasons, which you see here. The study measured the effect of the presence and absence of both Aphidius colmani and the resident predators and the resident species already in the soybean community on soybean aphid. And these are the results from that study. There are a couple important things to be gained from this study. And first of all, when you add Aphidius colmani or when you add a parasitoid to the resident enemy community, you get increased control beyond that achieved by the resident enemies alone, which is promising from a biological control standpoint. Additionally, you can see that if you look at the effect of Aphidius by itself, the parasitoid by itself, there's less effect when you add Aphidius to the resident enemies, suggesting pretty strongly that the resident enemies are causing some biotic interference against the parasitoid. And furthermore, we wanted to see if intraguild predation specifically was one of these mechanisms. And so during that study, we collected predators from the field and subjected them to a molecular gut contents analysis, where we looked for DNA of the parasitoid Aphidius colmani in the guts of the predators using PCR. And what you can see from this slide is that at least two species, the green lacewing Chrysoperla carnea and the coccinella Harmonia axyridis, will engage in intraguild predation against the parasitoid. Also of interest is that even though we collected about 35 aureus insidiosus, we never found any Aphidius colmani DNA inside of their guts, which may suggest that it might not be an important intraguild predator of soybean aphid parasitoids. So, with those results in mind, as well as even more so the results from the quarantined pre-release testings, George Heimpel, my advisor, applied for and received a permit to release the actual classical biological control agent, Bonodoxis communis, in 2007. And as you can expect, we were really interested when we were doing the actual releases of Bonodoxis how biotic interference would affect it. And so we conducted an experiment similar to the one that I just described using Aphidius colmani, the surrogate parasitoid. And in this we had three three levels of a cage treatment, which either prevented or allowed immigration of resident enemies, as well as two levels of a release treatment, where we either released or did not release Bonadoxis communists. We also replicated this experiment three times over the summer. Today I'm not going to be showing you the results from the no cage treatment, and the reason for this is that we had considerable alate immigration into the no cage treatment, and that kind of compromised the legitimacy of making direct comparisons between the no cage treatment and the full exclusion cages. So these next three slides are going to be the results from this study, and they're all going to look somewhat similar to this, with aphid densities on the y-axis and the presence of different natural enemy groups on the x-axis. In the early season, what we found is that both the presence of Bonadoxis communis as well as the presence of the resident enemies had significant effects on the soybean aphid densities. However, as you can see, there was a significant interaction between Bonadoxis communis and the resident enemies. And the way this can be interpreted in this situation is that the presence of the resident enemies compromised the effect of Bonadoxis, which strongly suggests that biotic interference was occurring against Bonadoxis. And here are the results from the mid-season. Similar to in the early season, the resident enemies still significantly depressed soybean aphid densities. However, in this replication of the experiment, we did not observe a significant effect of Bonadoxis on its own. And that may be due to a large variance in the aphids-only treatment, but we're not quite sure about that. Because there was no effect of Bonadoxis, we can't really say whether or not biotic interference was occurring during this replication. And then finally, during our late-season replication of this experiment, we observed yet a totally different set of results. The presence of Bonadoxis significantly depressed soybean aphid densities, as well as the presence of resident enemies. In this replication of the experiment, however, unlike in the early season replication, there was not a significant interaction between Bonadoxis and the resident enemies. And the way that this can be interpreted is that when you have Bonadoxis and the resident enemies together, you have additive effects on the soybean aphid community. And as you can imagine, this is kind of what you would desire from the perspective of biological control. So, even though we had three different sets of results from this study, I think we could still draw a few conclusions. And first of all, in at least two of the three cases, Bonadoxis communis did decrease aphid densities, and there was a trend toward it in the third case, although it was not significant. Secondly, it's definitely true that biotic interference can be strong enough to compromise the effect of Bonadoxis communis, as we witnessed in the early season. And finally, because we did observe the additive effects in that one replication of the experiment, we feel that it's okay to say that Bonadoxis communis can enhance overall biological control of the soybean aphid. So that's definitely not the end of this story. We've got a lot more to do when we're looking at biotic interference of a parasitoid of the soybean aphid. First of all, we've got some more to do just with the 2007 data itself. Besides just looking at aphid densities, we also looked at the mummies out in the field. We counted the number of whole, emerged, and then damaged mummies. And so we can look at that to see how biotic interference was working through interguild predation. Also, similar to the 2005 study, we collected predators throughout each of the replications of the experiment. And so we'll be conducting some molecular gut contents analysis on these predators, just like in 2005, to see which species specifically can engage in interguild predation against the parasitoid. And finally, when we began this study, we were kind of expecting to see some temporal trends in the effect of biotic interference, maybe along the lines of as the season progressed, the densities of the predators would increase and you would see stronger biotic interference. We didn't see any trends like that, and it's been suggested to us by a couple of colleagues that maybe it's not the density of predators that's important, but maybe it's the ratio of the predators to the prey in the field that is the important predictor of biotic interference. And we have this information for each of our specific plots that we were following, and so we're going to be looking at this more in a more detailed manner to see if the predator-prey ratio can predict the strength of biotic interference, possibly by its effect on mummy densities. And furthermore, I've mostly been talking about intraguild predation here today, but there are certainly other forms of biotic interference that may be occurring, and I'll just go through these quickly. For example, there are some interference competition mechanisms where, for example, coccinellids may lay chemical tracks that act as deterrents to foraging parasitoids. That may have an effect here. Also, hyperparasitoids and aphid symbionts might be an important effect. With that, I'd like to acknowledge my lab, my assistants, and my funding. And with that, thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. So the resident enemies and the parasitoid together, in two of the three cases, stayed below the injury level, but not in one of the cases. When Binodoxus was on its own, only in one of the cases was it below the injury level. I'm sorry. The coccinellids and the resident predators, they were just allowed to immigrate into open into shammed cages, but the parasitoid was released at density, a pretty high density of about one female to between 10 and 20 aphids, so pretty high. Sure. To begin with, we don't really have any evidence to suggest that Aphidius colmani, the surrogate parasitoid that we used in the first cases, has overwintering capabilities here. And if we want the biological control program to be successful permanently rather than just do an augmentative sort of a thing, we're going to need to have something that's able to overwinter in the cold Minnesota temperatures. Yeah.